The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
You didn't say it last
week. I didn't
week.
Say it last week, and I got scolded.
What's the name of the show?
The show's Beyond. Name is Beyond.
Beyond.
Lord, you said it enough times. Hey, everybody, welcome to Beyond episode 535. Yes. We're not saying it ever again. That's the last time we've ever said Beyond on the show,
you just
and we're not
did
saying
it.
Beyond again.
Did it.
Joke's on me. Beyond. My name is Max Scoville, and I'm joined today by Brian Altano.
Beyond.
Jonathan Dornbush.
Beyond.
And Marty Sliva.
Friendship Wagon.
The friendship wagon. The trailers are all hitched together with some sort of sturdy rope, and these boys are off on a nice Oregon trail of fun and companionship. I'm extremely tired. I was on vacation, and I'm jet-lagged, and I think I'm sick, but I'm going to do my best to power through this. We've got all sorts of hot, exciting news from the realm of video games. First and foremost, Bloodborne and Ratchet & Clank are free on PlayStation Plus this month. Go play them, please.
Yes, please.
Those are both very awesome games. Hopefully you don't play them like really back to back because they're tonally just
exactly
polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that in a second. There's some delays, which are not great. There are promotions, which are good for the people being promoted, and departures, which really could go either way. We're going to talk about the hit PlayStation game publisher Valve, which is they're doing some stuff with games. But let's talk about Bloodborne and Ratchet & Clank first.
Yeah, I feel bad because we didn't talk about it last week and we really should have because I was very excited on the fact that two of the best PS4 exclusives / games of this generation are free.
I agree.
Such a good lineup.
Yeah, Ratchet & Clank is a great game. Do we have to say anything else about it? Does anyone have anything else to say?
That's
really, really good game.
So I played that. I wasn't really attached to the originals. Like, I never got into them when they came out. I know they're great games, but as far as that level of nostalgia, the aesthetic I feel like is very...
it's beautiful here, so you
can
see.
Well,
here.
That's definitely not Ratchet & Clank. There's the one. Yeah. The aesthetic, I feel like a lot of people who are younger than me are nostalgic for it, but like in the same way that I like look at an old Super Nintendo game and I'm like, oh, like that's my childhood there.
Yeah.
But I was a little bit outgrown that look. But I played the game and gradually I was like, oh, this feels like a Rocket Raccoon game.
Yeah.
You know, you're like this little,
You
know, this little like vermin with a gun.
A wisecracking vermin with a large gun.
It's just super fun. And I also love that they kind of screwed around and they were like, hey, here's the game based on the movie, based on the game. And this is,
This is good, unlike the movie.
Considerably better,
It's very self-aware. And like, I'm pretty nostalgic for that franchise. I grew up with it on PS2. And what I love about this one is it looks like a Pixar movie, like in action. Like, it is such a gorgeous... When I went back and looked at what the PS2 one looked like, I'm like, how is this the same game?
Yeah, totally.
That's crazy. But it's also still just so fun to play. Like, they left a lot of what was intact on the PS2 there, but refined it a bit. And so the weapons that they created way back when are still there, and they're awesome weapons. Yeah. Like, the weapons that you get to play with, it's like there's a disco gun that makes all the enemies dance. Like,
the weapons are so good.
It's such a wide range.
And it's one of those things... I was sick over the weekend, and I played... For some reason, I just wanted comfort food games, and so I played a bunch of this, and I played a bunch of Sunset Overdrive, and that just got me super excited for Spider-Man.
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
Because Sunset Overdrive is like, oh, this is how Spider-Man's going to feel.
Yeah. Right.
Move around
right.
New York, and then all of sort of the humor and the gadgets in Ratchet & Clank, I'm like, oh, and then this is what the game, like, the tools we have at our disposal, this is what they're going to feel like, and this is what the dialogue and the banter is going to be like, which is awesome.
The disco that's, spider.
Yeah, that's really interesting to perceive it that way as sort of the recipe for what mm-hmm. Spider-Man's going to be. I saw that they were tweeting out some like still images of Peter Parker in a full suit in his apartment and everything, and I was like, oh, that's right. They're making this game, and it's going to be yep. incredible. Yep. Like, I think we've...
Spectacular.
Spectacular is the word. Or amazing. There it is. Yeah. I think we've been sort of like... I will say I've been sort of calm about my optimism for that game because I don't really know where it's going to go. But the more I pay attention to it, I'm like, no, this is a real thing. There was a while there where I was like, I don't know if the Spider-Man is going to be an actual full game, if it's just going to be QTEs or if it's going to be like, no, this is a real full-fledged Spider-Man game. And it's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be great.
And yeah, so go play Ratchet. The animation's really fantastic. Yeah. I don't know if we talked about that.
Yeah, the lighting really is really cool because I think it's neat. The designs are very like, you know, they polish them up and up-res them and everything, add more textures and stuff, but the lighting in that game is mm-hmm. just really, really
he also like, even like the idle animations, like when I was reviewing it, I walked away and I came back and he was like juggling and just like tapping his shoe and like playing with his wrench, and that's totally stuff I can imagine if you leave Spider-Man still.
Right.
He's been doing all sorts of
work. He'll do stuff with like just hanging in webs or like create a hammock and stuff.
Yeah, it's cool or something.
Yeah.
More importantly.
So you play this during the morning, and then what do you play at night?
Bloodborne.
Yeah.
More importantly. And like I feel like I don't know. We say this a lot. Like we state very obvious opinions here at IGN. We're like, oh, Super Mario is a great game. People are like, yeah, I know. But sometimes people have to be reminded a little bit. And I think this specifically, Bloodborne, you probably read about it over the last few years, seen videos about it, heard me yelling about how great it is. Mm-hmm. This game is not for everybody. And you probably started it or you're looking at it and you're like, oh, it pushes back a lot. It's really hard. It's really evil. It's all those things. If you are on the fence and you are a PlayStation Plus subscriber, I urge you to please give this game another
chance.
Just
put it in your library. You can play it later. You can
get it later, whatever you're going to do. Yeah, add it to your Quay, your Q, however you say
it's
that.
It's Q. It's not like Quay.
I think it's Quay.
Quay.
Quay is
sort of
Quay.
A roller coaster of U's and E's.
Yeah. I've been that person who's been on the fence since it came out, and just like it didn't seem for me, didn't seem that type of game, but I've heard how much you and so many people in the office have praised it, and like now that it's free, I don't have an excuse. Like, I just want to dive in.
The thing with that game, and I wish that I'd bothered to like just ask around a little bit about like what to do, because it's a game that very much needs to have that kind of playground like support group where you go and you're like, I don't know what to do now, and somebody's like, oh, you got to go find the twisted lever and do the gnarled root or the blood tears or something.
All those are pretty much things in the game.
Yeah, you have to die on the first boss before you can level up.
Yeah, or you there's another way to level up. You can find the madman's knowledge somewhere in some hole.
Right.
It's easier to just die.
Yeah. But you basically told me that, and I pretty much was like, oh, then I shouldn't waste time just getting my ass repeatedly kicked by these dudes in the same street because you don't get any, like you learn where things are, but it's faster to just kind of burn through, find the boss, die, and then you have the opportunity to start grinding.
Yeah.
The second I did that, the game made sense to me.
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, like you've probably seen this game running in action. You're probably like, it's too scary or it's too hard. It does push back a lot, but there's this hump that happens early on that if you get over it, or get good, as they say, the game magically opens up and it becomes this thing where it pushes back a lot, but once you start kind of grinding a little bit, getting better at combat, getting better weapons, the tips I'll give you right out the box is like, yeah, like Max said, you know, die on the first boss so you can start leveling up. Keep an eye on your weapon has like a mild degradation thing where basically it'll break after a while. You bring it back to the doll lady in your home or whatever in your weird farmland.
Oh,
area.
Toy wife.
Toy wife.
Toys are KB
go back,
toys.
Go back
wife.
To the real KB doll.
Fixes it. Use the weird magical threaded cane whip thing if you're a new player because it's.
I saw
it's,
somebody else say sword is better for newcomers.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer the threaded whip cane thing.
That's
because
what I went with.
It plays very Castlevania-y and it also gives you a good distance from your enemies.
You've got speed and range with that. Which
definitely,
is nice.
Definitely.
Yeah.
This is a much quicker game than like your average Souls like or Dark Souls style game, and it's just so incredibly like. Just creatively gruesome mm-hmm. to the point where tiptoeing around corners in that game feels like nothing else I've ever played in a video game. I replayed the game in its entirety this year because I felt like it. And it completely cemented the game as a top three game of all time for me.
Wow.
Like it went from being like, oh, I really like Bloodborne. It's one of my favorite games to, oh my God, yeah, this is up there with like stuff like Resident Evil 4 and Link's Awakening and Mario 64 and a couple other, like if you had a cram them all in gun to head, here's your top five games of all time.
Rules.
It's somewhere up there. I even played through all the DLC this year, which is awesome. It's also on sale. So if you start playing Bloodborne, which you can get for free through PlayStation Plus or whatever you pay a year, and you're like, I like this, jump and grab the DLC because it's like dirt cheap right now. Yep. And it's usually $20. I think it's like 10 or 15 now. Yeah. So just get it, put it in your Quay, your queue.
It's not Quay. It's a save.
So good news about this is, I think to kind of coincide with this, the Bloodborne community, without any official like sanctioning, has decided to make this, what are they calling it, Bloodfest or something? Yeah. Hashtag Bloodfest. Basically, they're all jumping in, and there is this kind of, confusing kind of almost journey-esque multiplayer in this game, yeah, where people will leave you obtuse poetry written in the blood on the ground or something, and occasionally will come into your game and help you fight things. But
right,
basically the game grows by more people playing it. Mm-hmm. So right now, the fact that a lot of people are playing it, it's a really good time to jump in.
And it's one of those things where like it seems super intimidating, but the community by and large, I think, is really welcoming.
Yeah.
Like there is that small, like, you got to get good and like, oh, this game isn't for you. But then there's a lot of people who are like us where it's like, this game is actually for everyone. Like, we're not the best at video games, but we got through Bloodborne.
Yeah. I was telling Max at lunch that it felt like my first year in art school, all the classes were 6 hours long. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, I can't do this. This sucks. And they all, like, half the class quit. And then, like, the next year, they were like 3 hours long. Yeah. And it was like, oh, if you had just stuck around, like, it gets easier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the game gets, it ramps up in difficulty, but the cool thing about it is that you get better and better and better as you play. Also, I think that this game is genuinely one of the scariest games ever made. And we've seen a big shift towards more sort of first-person-y jump scare stuff, like Outlast-y type stuff. And the Twitch communities have really gravitated towards that in the last few years. And that's awesome. I love games like that. But that sort of like creeping sense of horror and survival elements that are really missing in a lot of Resident Evil games.
This is also like, it's like, it's like boss fight terror.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even, it's not even a boss necessarily, but you come across some enemy you haven't encountered before and you don't know what it's capable of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, that, you get that feeling of
screaming like, the fear of the what the F is that is something I say to myself constantly playing this game.
You start entering, like, you see like an open grove and you're like, I know what's going to happen. I'm going to enter that. Yeah. I'm going to see a cutscene. I'm going to fight a nightmare.
Yeah. And the cool thing too is that this is an open world game. I don't think a lot of people really realize that. Like, you can sequence break this thing. Mm-hmm. You can, there's branching paths. The first boss in the game for most people is not the same first boss as it is for other people, right? There's two different ways you can go. And the whole flow of the game is to basically like get through a street full of a bunch of bad mother, kill as many as you can or sneak past them, open up a gate, and that'll make your sort of sequence through the next section even easier.
I've never been so proud of myself for opening a door.
Yeah.
Oh my God, gates are like the biggest thing.
You open up shortcuts for yourself.
The way it's constructed is just fascinating. And it also teaches you to appreciate the architecture and the level, and it makes you learn things. Like I have a mental map of where things are in that game in a way that I have for things in real life.
Yeah.
I think it's the mark of
so
good.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love a good like sense of space in a game. It's like certain memories I have of like even something like Wind Waker. Like I can tell you the direction I went. Like that's one of my favorite games.
Yeah, for sure.
I know things
that
I
love.
You need
to play this game. Yeah. It's really impressive.
I will say like the frame rate gets a little stuttery when goes crazy. There's no 4K patch. If you're playing on a pro, it took me a minute to sort of be like, huh? That's right.
The loading times are better from launch, but still not
fantastic.
Oh, really?
Comparatively.
Yeah.
I
quit the game initially because of the loading times, and it has since been like, this is also, they added like facts on the screen. So they can be like, oh, the Blood's Whip. That's the new potion of the
you don't just have to look at the Bloodborne logo.
Also, read all the item descriptions if you want the story, because that game's got a really cool story that you need to work on.
There's just so much cool lore and so much cool stuff. Go get the art book if you're new.
They just started a comic, which is Titan Comics is publishing it. The first issue's out. It's got this wonderful kind of sketchy, almost like Marty doesn't like it at all. He specifically Brian, Max, check out this awful Bloodborne
comic. Hey, let's make fun of it with me, and then you guys liked it. I was like, oh.
Yeah, no, it was a... It's got like kind of just creepy, sketchy drawn, googly eyed monsters.
Like a poo.
So anyway,
I think it has that weird sort of drunken swagger that every enemy in the game has, where they're just swaying and there's like skin and cloth hanging.
It looks like it was drawn by Europeans who had wine for lunch.
Ooh,
lunch. Also, one last thing: this game has some of my favorite sound design ever for a game that is an incredibly minimalistic soundtrack. There's almost no music in the overworld, but you get to bosses and things ramp up, and the way things scream and sort of bubble and gurgle in the night in this game. Like, you turn the corner and there's just like dudes who are just like,
I think one of my favorite things is there's a courtyard you go into, and everyone's in their homes. That's something that, like, they don't show you. There's not like NPCs walking around being like, oh, hello there, how are you today? But you hear people having a dinner party, and there's a like, faint candlelight in one of the windows, and you hear a woman laughing, and it's this freaky sensation that, like, oh, the town is on lockdown because monsters are roaming the streets.
Right.
But I'm out here with them. They're in there having a nice time.
Yeah.
This sucks.
Well, they're also kind of so like, you walk by the door, and they're like, go away, you garbage man.
Oh, you bring me the golden strawberry I asked for? Away!
This totally did the thing, like, in the same way that Ratchet has me excited for Spider-Man, this is cool because it has us excited for whatever Shadows Die Twice
is.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully we see more of that at E3.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the more I think about... I've said for years now, like, I want a Bloodborne 2, and replaying the game, I'm like, I actually don't want that at all. I want them to make something completely new and surprising.
Neon Genesis Evangelion game.
Something completely new.
That would be so good.
Completely new.
Yeah, it's completely new to you. You've never seen that show. I don't know what's going on. No, what's Shinji going up to?
There's a bunch of dudes in womenly robot suits.
No, they're not womenly robot suits. They're just tight-fitting.
They're fine.
So messed up. I literally currently at home, I have the Bloodborne art book sitting on top of an Evangelion art book that just showed up from Amazon last week. So
convenient.
There's not an Evangelion game. That's not happening, I don't think.
It's weird you're also a lead developer at From Software.
Yeah.
I admit Scoville song.
Play Bloodborne.
Do it.
And when it scares you, play Ratchet and Clank because it's cute.
Yep. Yeah.
So on the subject of, I don't know, there's no segue here. Days Gone has been delayed to 2019.
I would have gone with like the zombie scary horror.
I would have just been on games that you won't be playing this year.
There you go.
Days Gone.
You can't go home and play right now. Days Gone. That's been delayed until 2019. Official website changed from 2018 to 2019. Sony said it was deliberate. They didn't accidentally change the year on a website and announce something.
Yeah, this is funny because a week after they announced the date for Detroit at the end of May, they're like, oh, and by the way, the other game that you saw a couple years ago is not coming out this year. Which we were talking, I think, last week. This makes sense because in Sony's portfolio, this is the game that shouldn't come out this fall because, A, aside from Spider-Man, which hopefully comes out summer or early fall,
right?
Everything should get out of the way of Red Dead, and then at the beginning of October, Call of Duty.
Yep.
Especially a new IP like this. I think
and
this
Smash
is
Brothers
and Smash. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Jesus. This being an early 2019 game seems like a good fit. Like that's that dying light sort of spot where it's like, hey, we played all the fall games. What do we want to play in January, February, or March? Hey, it's this.
And here's like a meaty. Likely open world experience. Where
exploring. My worry is that.
Do you suffer from winter depression? Well, check out the Pacific Northwest, filled with death and hopeless rainfall.
Hey, sometimes it's snow. It's sunny.
Yeah, dynamic depressing weather system.
Now that I live on the West Coast, this is escapism for me because I don't get to walk around snowy forests anymore. Yeah.
I don't get to be chased by hordes of freakers.
Getting this away from Red Dead is very smart because.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, obviously they're very different games, but you know, again, it's a huge sprawling open world game, and people are gonna, you know, they're gonna make their pick, and one of them has a two at the end of it.
So. Well, especially not just Red Dead, but this fall is getting so stacked with
the big worry is 2019 is gonna have another Sony game that has a two in it, and that's The Last of Us.
Yes,
and they seem a little bit the cordyceps seem a little bit similar to the freakers, and I just don't think like no matter how good Days Gone is, you don't want to be sort of compared to Last of Us 2. You don't want to be compared to arguably the sequel to the best game of the last generation.
Especially that we've seen that The Last of Us Part 2 probably takes at least partially in Seattle,
right?
In the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah,
there are a lot of just easy comparisons to draw, even if they're very different types.
Well,
of games
and that
to play.
Joel dies and becomes a motorcycle. That
yes,
only rides.
Yeah,
so, like she rides
the prologue.
It's weird that he still talks as a motorcycle.
As a talking motorcycle. Yeah. It's like Bionic Commando when his wife became his arm.
Yeah, that's true. Something tells me the good folks at Sony are cracking this puzzle right now. They're not just like, oops, zombie games on the same day.
We lace them on the same day.
That said, you're right. Like when we all do get together to talk about game of the year or when people reflect on a year's worth of video games, these things should be spaced out a little bit, and one will almost certainly overshadow the other. I'm not saying it'll be The Last of Us 2, but it'll probably be The Last of Us 2. That said, I'm really into this game. Like, I'm actually really excited for Days Gone. I'm of the mindset that I'm not dying to play it, so if they need to take the time with it. The same thing I was like with Red Dead. I'm like, take your time. Like, when it's ready, I'll be here, and I'll play it. But Ready, Deady, Redemption. My worry is that Red Dead comes out, and then Red Dead's like, let's do the zombie stuff, and then that comes out the same day as this.
Yeah.
That is something that Rockstar would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you wrote down, Marty, you wrote, should we be worried?
Yeah.
I almost read that correctly, but I don't think so. No, it's Sony. Worried. It's a first-party thing. Obviously, they want to put out a title that shows off their hardware to the best of its abilities.
Yeah.
And, I think this is probably either just strategic or they're like, the motorcycle isn't fast enough. Make it cooler.
Yeah. My worry is that this game, we've seen it at a couple E3s, and this game hasn't had the demo that made us be like, oh, this is why I'm stoked. Which God of War's had, Spider-Man had, even Detroit's, some of those demos have had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just worried that they haven't done the, like, oh, I fully trust you.
Everything I like about this game is because I've played a version of it in a different game that I enjoyed. You know, there hasn't really been like, it's not like the first time I saw, I don't know, you take like a really interesting, innovative game, right? Like even something like recently, something like Odyssey, where it was like, oh, the mechanic here is you throw your hat at something and you become them. And
or that first like Horizon demo where you're like, oh, okay, I get what's going on.
Yeah. Watching like a dinosaur getting taken down in Horizon. Yeah. I was like, I've never played anything like this.
Yeah.
And I'm not getting that here. I'm getting a lot of like, well, this looks good because I know what it's like to drive a motorcycle in a game. I know what it's like to fight a bunch of zombies in a game. Mm-hmm. The big hook here is that you're fighting like large waves, snaky hordes of undead.
To put it in kind of in a nutshell, this is going to be a little bit like Far Cry, but instead of animals, it's zombies. And that there's a lot of them, you know, so like, you're able to use them to your advantage, but they're also a danger to you.
Yeah. In the same way, like incredibly reductive. A bear or a tiger can kill you in Far Cry. If you're smart, you can have it kill everything else. And same thing with like AC Origins with like lions that are in,
and there are undead bears in this game.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I like that a lot. Actually, that's what the kind
they're
of
not
thing.
Not undead. They're freakers.
I want to see freaker animals. I want to see more of them.
Chris Angel mind freaker animals.
Yeah. I think that's what will separate this from other games sort of its ilk.
I think it's also, it's also good to give it its time because it did have its moment that didn't really land back in 2016 at E3, where it was both shown at like the beginning of the conference
and closed the show
and then closed.
Like, yeah, no,
and it was like, oh, this is cool, but it also feels like other things I've seen.
Yeah. It had its moment, like, but it also had it overstayed its welcome almost, and that wasn't their fault. You could very clearly see that something else was supposed to be there and got yanked out at the last second.
I have a lot of faith this is going to be an incredible game because it's you know, it's first party. It looks incredibly ambitious, but like, I'm worried it's going to be the same thing that Horizon did for me, where it's got enough pieces of games that I've played before, and I'm just sort of like, well, this is huge. Do I want to devote time to doing this thing that feels familiar? You know, and I, in the case of Horizon, like, I thought the setting was really fascinating. I didn't really care for the story, but in this case, I'm actively turned off the backwards baseball cap Walking Dead aesthetic. Like, it's just the kind of, I don't know, it's not my jam. Like,
I'm
I
just hoping
kinda
3 days after this game comes out, something like Breath of the Wild is like, just give it some time to breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they let you, like, get a different hat.
I just don't really like that dude, you know? Like, he's got, like, too many coats on.
Sam Witwer, he's a wonderful man. He's friends with us.
Oh, he's cool. The actual man is cool.
Oh, the guy in the game.
Yeah.
He's got too many coats. What it's cold.
I forget his name. He's got some, like...
Deacon something.
Deacon St. John.
It's Deacon St. John.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. I don't know. I'm not into, like, biker stuff.
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah. It's floating around in there somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm not crazy, but, like, I binge-watched all the Sons of Anarchy seasons, and I was like, I don't know how I feel after that.
Max, I feel like you could have been the son of a biker.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't trust them.
They're good
at I'm just kidding. I trust the bikers. Don't attack me.
Don't throw chains at my home.
Don't hit me with your bike rocks.
Yeah, that's you picked a bad audience to go out. People that can show up incredibly quickly and then leave alone.
Yeah, that was the thing. Is like, well, Brian and I made fun of Sonic fans once. You made fun of bikers. Yeah. Like, they killed people at Altamont.
Sonic fans are pretty fast, though.
That's true.
When they rent a van.
Bikers, they leave silently in the night, very loudly. Anyway, in other news kind of related to Last of Us 2 and stuff, there have been some shufflings around at Naughty Dog. Neil Druckmann is now the vice president of Naughty Dog, the studio.
Woo!
Still creative director on Last of Us 2.
Yes. That was one thing people were worried where it's like, oh no, are you no longer going to be making things and just like signing checks and running day to day? And it's like, no, he's still the lead on the game.
Do you think he hired that dog full time? The mocap dog from Last of Us?
Oh, yeah.
No, I think they probably had it put down.
Absolutely did not have it put down.
No.
I think there's probably a thing. There's probably some like Screen Actors Dog Guild where if they're mocapping a dog, they can't do it again because it would look too much like
sad.
They reuse the data. I don't know. I just made that up.
The
that
digital dog?
I don't know. And then it's announced that Anthony Newman and Kurt Margino are now game directors on The Last of Us. Emily Schatz and Richard Cambier are now lead designers. This is congratulations to everybody who
Well, I like promoted. The fact that it's nice to see companies, because we always write about layoff stories, And it's like, everyone left BioWare, which I think is where we're literally getting to after this. Yeah. But, like the idea that it's like, oh, people worked hard on, since Uncharted 2 on all these games and they're slowly moving up. And a lot of these people, like, yeah, they're working on Last of Us 2, but we know Naughty Dog's a 2-team studio. And so maybe some of these people are working on whatever the next project
is. What's interesting about this though is that every studio has slightly different structure, you know, and we treat it like when it's, like the director's announced for a movie, but it's not the same because movies are sort of singular projects and everything is done like, everyone's kind of a contractor there. Whereas this Naughty Dog is a building, people go to work there, people have benefits there, presumably. I don't know how apocalyptic things. Yeah.
I think they have benefits.
Apparently not the dog, according to
Matt. Scott has benefits.
Yeah. They all get to pet that dog once a year.
Yeah. It's the therapy dog. It has to wear its ping pong ball suit every day.
Healthcare in America.
But no, I think it's interesting because like what is how studios are structured varies widely across depending on the size of the studio and what they're working on and everything. So
well, Marty, you hit on it right there. The fact that Neil is still the creative director on The Last of Us 2 is huge because I think that's like this happens a lot in business and in industries in general where people elevate to a point where they are they're sort of just like. There's cops and robbers, basically, right? And the robbers are out there having fun, and the cops are like, this is what you can do, and this is what
Miyamoto wasn't the lead on Mario Odyssey or Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Right. And then you look at, like, I don't know if we covered it, but Michael Condrey and Glenn Schofield at Sledgehammer moved up to, like, exec positions at Activision.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are like, they're like deep in the stocks now, I guess, right? Yeah. And they're like,
buy low, sell high.
Yeah, buy low. Bitcoin. But it doesn't sound like they're in the nitty gritty of creating video games anymore. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they get to come in once a month. I know like with Miyamoto for a while, he would just kind of come in. There was a long time in the 90s where he would come in and be like, I heard you're making a game about dinosaurs. And they're like, yeah. And he's like, put Star Fox in it. Bye. I was like, oh, you asshole. It's hard to deal with that. So it's cool to see people still being in there. Whether or not that actually pans out to be true, who knows? Because Neil's role is going to change.
It's going to change. I don't think it's going to change on this game, especially since Bruce Straley left.
Yeah.
I think that was – The Last of Us was their baby, and I think now it's his baby. And I think he's going to see it out the door. And maybe that means – maybe some of these hires mean that he's grooming the next set of creative directors of the next games, which eventually that's what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at stuff like this because, as you know, Max just kind of alluded to it, but as companies grow and change over time, it's completely different set of people than what you had at the beginning. You look at stuff like Rare and Retro, and people are always like, make another Banjo, make another Metroid, and they're like, well, we can't.
They're not the same people.
I read this is totally tangential, but I read a weird story the other day that apparently there are – do you guys know the band UB40?
Yeah. Red Wine?
Do you know what's up with them now?
No, what happened?
They never know what was up with them.
Yeah, well, they're terrible. I don't care about them. But they've split into two groups that are both pretending to be UB40. And they're fighting with each other over who owns the rights. And they have different front men, but neither of them are even the original group anymore.
So they got a Danzig Misfits thing going on?
Yeah, so you can go see them in concert, and if you're that divorced – and
if you want reality,
how divorced is that divorced?
Yeah. But you're not seeing the same version of this thing that you thought you grew up with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens a lot with characters that are humans and not fictitious. You know, like the Superman is now written and drawn by different people, but he's still kind of Superman. Whereas Naughty Dog now is different than Naughty Dog 5 years ago. And if they make The Last of Us 3, who knows? Neil Druckmann may be so deep into the other end of the corporate pool that a completely new set of people come in and tell those stories. So.
I want to write a script about this whole, all this band
this
drama.
This UB40 drama.
UB40. Yeah. That's what happens when you hit 40.
This is UB40. Anyway, so also in terms of, company shuffling around. BioWare writer Drew Karpyshyn has left a second time. He wrote Mass Effect 1 and 2.
And then he was writing Old Republic.
I thought he came back for the Old Republic.
Oh, he came back for the Old Republic. Right. And then he was like, I'm writing Anthem. And
yeah,
he's like, I'm done.
He left, and now he's going to do other stuff.
So
I
he's
going to
go write books?
Ooh. He's gonna. I think he said that he's got a freelance thing with a Fox.
Mozilla Firefox.
He's not writing for a browser.
He writes all the crash reports.
No, apparently it's going to be
really creative
episodic narrative game for
Spry Fox.
Super 5.
It's, Fox Next.
Fox Next?
Was the like their new, yeah, like Fox's new development company.
That is Fox, the studio connected though, right?
Yes, yeah. They okay. now like focus on yeah. game development.
So this as, like, is an episodic Fox. Narrative thing based on an existing IP?
Yes, yeah.
Say
that's
what
definitely.
It is, so that's open to interpretation.
Yeah. Yep. People are just sort of worried because in the past 2 years or so, so many people have left BioWare. And a lot of that was yeah. because of the fallout from Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah.
But
and
there's
the
just
fallout
this,
from Mass Effect 3.
And, yeah, and there's just sort of a general sense of like, BioWare needing to get their footing again. Like, Anthem looked really cool at E3 yeah. last year, but like, this is the big year. We know it's at EA Play.
Remember
like,
when mm-hmm. they announced a game and had it playable at PAX and then it canceled it?
Oh, yeah. The, like the 4v1
oh,
game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Realms,
yeah.
What was it called?
Shadow something. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Realms.
Shadow
yeah.
Hunters?
I mean, yeah. that's yeah. what I'm saying is I don't remember. Like, I played that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a, yeah, it was
weird.
Like 4v1. Like,
remember 4v1?
4v1.
Evolve.
Yeah.
That's another, I mean, that's another sort of UB40 of the games industry, right? Like, who are they now? What are yeah. they? You know?
Stop. You absolutely can't say BioWare or UB40 of the games industry.
Who sings Red Red Wine at BioWare? Is that the name of the song? I remember. That was their only song.
No, they did a cover of that Elvis song, "Falling in Love with
Two
You.
Princes."
Why are you no. talking about UB40 on a PlayStation show?
We're trying to get them. You know what? If Greg can become friends with Cisco, we can become friends with UB40.
Exactly.
Apologies to any members of either version of UB40 currently listening to our show,
and apologies to Cisco for being compared to UB40.
Okay, so anyway, Drew Carverson wrote, I know a lot of you are wondering why I'm doing this. He wrote on his blog, for many people, working at BioWare would be their dream job, and they can't imagine anyone stepping away from it, but it was time for me to move on. Everyone who works at BioWare pours their heart and soul into the games they're making. It's creatively demanding and at times exhausting, yada, yada, yada. I feel like, I mean, you read stories about working at a game studio and just, I don't think you need a reason to leave, you know?
Well, you can leave anywhere. People yeah. leave IGN. It's not because they hate it. They leave.
No, I mean,
they want to do something else.
I feel like if you were like, hey, BioWare is hiring, I'd be like, oh, I'm okay. Like,
no, I mean, from the outside looking
they
in.
They get like death threats and then like spiteful cupcakes sent to their offices. Like,
yeah. From the outside looking in,
are
like
good?
Video games are a grand old time and they make themselves and they're super easy and everyone working on them having the time of their lives. And the reality is it's like shipping projects is incredibly difficult. And
I watched Grandma's Boy. It seems like they're having a great time.
Yeah, that guy made an entire yeah. game on an Xbox.
Demonic.
A 3D. Yeah.
He got in trouble because he burned his hands on the stove trying to make the marijuana meal.
Weird thing about that movie, it's got a ton of UB40 in it. No. Weird thing about that movie, again, total tangent, but when I first saw that movie, I was like, that's utterly ridiculous. Nobody could ever make a 3D video game by themselves. That is like 50% of Kickstarter now.
Yeah.
It's just a
yeah.
dude being like, I made all the music myself. Like, I made all the, like, A Hat in Time is made by like yeah. one guy.
Yeah.
You're like, how'd you even do this? Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. yeah.
Grandma's Boy is real.
His grandma helped.
You know what else is real? It's Happy Gilmore.
Shut up.
Real film.
Shut up, Brian.
Yeah, but remember when he cut the crocodile's head off and then killed his friend because he's like, I got the croc that bit your hand off and he fell out the window.
And he fell out the window and died. Yeah. And the truck drove over his hand.
Yeah, and the bad guy was named Shooter McGavin. That was a good name.
So anyway, Valve's yeah. making games again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a
segue. They've got that game Artifact.
Yeah, but that's not. We don't need to talk about Artifact. It's not
going to be a PS4. It's a combination of two things I don't know or care about, which is collectible card games and Dota 2. So
like
that's,
Yu-Gi-Oh?
I guess. I don't know.
Sign me up then.
But yeah, it's good that they're making games again. Obviously, they've kind of. I've always said that they've been like. People are like, why doesn't Valve make more games? And it's like, because they made Steam. They don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. that's like if Pixar turned into Netflix.
Yeah.
Like, why bother?
But this was at the event that Miranda and Tom were at on Thursday. Gabe Newell just straight up said, like, yeah, this is the start of us shipping games again.
Yeah.
And they haven't shipped a full real game since 2013 with Dota.
And that's definitely a more definitive statement. Like, the last few years they've talked about, like, we're not completely out of games. Or, like, we're into VR games. Or we haven't negated the idea that we wouldn't do Portal or Half-Life games right. in that universe again.
Dude posted the script to Half-Life 3 on his blog. And he's like, anyway, we're not making it. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there have been all these vague statements throughout time, but like saying they're, yes, coming to Smash, Half-Life 3. But saying that they are shipping games again beyond Artifact to me implies there's more coming. It could be 5 years from now, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know they still have, I think, 3 VR projects in the works. And Gabe Newell did say in Reddit AMA in January that they are working on a single-player game.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but he lies a lot.
Yeah, well, and supposedly those J.J. Abrams movies are still coming, whatever those are.
Yeah.
Those are still things they're supposedly working on, according to that AMA.
Yeah.
So.
Man, what the hell?
I really want a Half-Life or a Portal or a Left 4 Dead or something else.
Mm-hmm. What if they just made a rebooted Half-Life entirely? Like, here's the Half-Life again. And everyone's like, you really can't count to three, can you?
But that's the thing. Gabe Newell's like afraid of threes.
It's really weird because I was working here during kind of the thick of it with Left 4 Dead and Portal just being really huge franchises. And if you had asked me back then, like, do you think these things will be around? I would have been like, yeah, we would be playing a new one of these.
We're going to get sick of them at a certain point.
Yeah. Like every 2 or 3 years, we're going to get a new Portal game and it's going to have like 3 hours worth of awesome puzzles and then like great VO and a great story. It's going to be super funny. Everyone's going to buy all these weird shirts based on the jokes in them. Mm-hmm. We're going to run it into the ground. We're going to get tired of it. And then a new one will come out and be amazing. And then they just stop. The fact that Left 4 Dead basically was like we were at the kind of the apex of like the zombie entertainment culture.
Yeah.
And it's just, they were just like, bye.
Yeah, you're gonna stop.
What the hell?
Well, and then that weird asynchronous multiplayer games blew up so much and that all this other stuff were happening. And they were just like, no, we're leaving.
Well, and they're still like, it's crazy that for Portal, at least we just got Bridge Constructor Portal.
Yeah.
Which is still a Portal themed thing. And like, I started playing it and it totally has like the whole GLaDOS aesthetic to it. And you're very much like within the labs there. It feels like a Portal game that is just a different type of puzzle game. And then they also like, they're still supporting Team Fortress 2. They did like a really huge update to that game last year.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, Bridge Constructor feels like the kind of thing that you'd be like, oh, that's a cool thing to sit alongside Portal 3.
Same thing with Portal and Lego Dimensions.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's like a bunch of like original dialogue and VO, but what about Portal 3?
And that's like, that's so, it's so frustrating to be like, I know you guys remember Portal because you're referencing it and you're making games alluding to it and it's a mini game in Lego over here and like there's an entire old like side game where you're building bridges and stuff like that and it's like, well, where's Portal 3? Where's Portal 4? Where's the next Left 4 Dead? Like, I can't understand why, like, that's still an immensely popular game. Like, I just don't get it. They just stop.
I feel like the way to get around the fear of threes is to just release Orange Box 2. And then have Portal 3 and Left 4 Dead 3 in there. And like, look, we actually just...
Or you could just skip to Force.
Or maybe it's a bunch of just new things that we've never seen before that are just made
like
there.
New things.
To this day, I still cannot believe that the Orange Box was a real thing.
Yeah.
It's still just like... Could you imagine that nowadays? A major publisher being like, here's like 6 of our games and like a bunch of them are brand new.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, it's like being like, hey, so the next Uncharted and the next Horizon, it's the same game.
Yeah.
You just buy it once and you get them both. You're like, why? What? What did we do?
Yeah, there's a couple Jack and Daxters in there too. Just have a good weekend.
Yeah. And here's Overwatch. You're like, what?
In high school.
Yeah. You're like, okay.
Having to install Steam and just being like, ugh, what is this? And now it's like the most kind of just ubiquitous PC gaming. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're a strange company.
Did you know there's an actual large Valve at Valve as well when people take pictures?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Cranking it.
Does Gabe Newell do like the Willy Wonka thing where he comes out and he pretends to be like sick with a cane and then just does a somersault and then like throws like Steam coupons at everybody?
Sounds horrifying. they did that in a while until people started throwing up.
No, I mean they do have that like Willy Wonka thing going on where it's like they're like, you're like, what are they working on in there? I don't know, but it's got to be good.
Yeah, there's a large boy stuck in a chocolate pie.
That's the reason why we haven't gotten Portal 3
that right now. Anyway, speaking of things that are blue, there's a
Violet. You're turning violet. Violet.
Blue Points. Blue Point is making another game.
Half-Life 3.
They're doing an HD remix of Half-Life 2. They said we could be doing another remake, but wait, what does it say, Marty? You do it.
I don't have a piece of paper.
But we're doing another remake. While Thresh remained tight-lipped on what the next remake might be, he did speak in broad terms about what's next for Bluepoint. This was said to Digital Foundry via Eurogamer.
And then, so we said the thing they're working on is bigger than their last thing, which was Shadow of the Colossus remake, which
that's
is
huge,
which is a straight up, you know, I gave it a 9.7, like one of the greatest games I've ever played. And so looking at Blue Point's history, they're one of those studios like Armature that came from Retro. Mm-hmm. Like they were founded by former Retro folks. Mm. And then they started out with, I think the game was called Blast Reactor, which was actually one of the first two PSN games.
Yep.
And then since then, they've had a very close partnership with Sony doing these HD remakes, and that ranges from...
They did Metal Gear HD Collection, right?
Yes. Metal Gear to Uncharted, God of War, to Shadow of the Colossus. They've done some non-Sony stuff with, like, they did the 360 version of Titanfall. And so the big question is, like, what is this thing they're doing that could be bigger than Shadow of the Colossus that we could speculate maybe has a Sony... slant to it.
Well, I totally misread this, and I thought he said we are doing another remake, and then we of course have a list of remakes we hope that they're working on. But that's so smart as a company, because they, and a lot of companies that port stuff over, that's a way you learn the guts of hardware without having to build a game at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like copying a famous artist's painting or something.
They've clearly like really done their homework on how to develop for the PS4, because they make absolutely beautiful remakes. Yeah, not just Shadow, but like everything they've done.
Well, and that's one of the things, they did the PS3 version of Eco and Shadow, and so they knew the internals of that game. So going into, like, they had a leg up over everyone. So going into the PS4 remaster or remake or whatever the hell you want to call it, like, the reason it's still one of the best looking games ever made is because they understand it. Yeah, so that's the thing, is what is it? And so there's a couple thoughts.
Because the word big is very vague. It could mean like a literally larger game, or that the undertaking is so much bigger than what they had to do.
And so my first thought was, they're the leads on the Medieval remake, which was announced at PSX, which you don't think of that game as big, but I think the big part of that could mean that's a PS1 game. That's going to take a lot of work to make anyone want to play this in a modern setting. It's a PS1 3D action game, and in order to make that... in order to make you not want to throw up playing it in 2019 or 2018, like, you have to completely remake that game. So maybe that's what it means, is a complete remake.
Yeah. Or, which is a big undertaking, not necessarily a big IP.
Ostensibly making a game from the ground up. Or if you want a big IP, the one Metal Gear game that they haven't touched is Guns of the Patriots. So maybe Metal Gear 4.
Well, and also, what if they did the HD collection, the MGS HD collection again, but did what they did with Shadow?
Right.
Because wasn't MGS largely like a remaster?
Yeah.
Whereas they could be doing what they did with Shadow and really bumping it up.
Or if you do that with just Metal Gear Solid 1.
And making it look good on a 4K TV.
Like, what if you make Metal Gear Solid 1 just feel like Phantom Pain?
Yeah.
It would be so bittersweet, because after seeing what the Fox engine can do.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of had that with Twin Snakes though, where new mechanics that were introduced in 2, they just threw them on like 1, and it broke the game.
It straight up broke every boss fight in that game,
part of me is like, man, I want to see Metal Gear Solid 1 in the Fox engine, but like, no, I don't.
Yeah,
because that would be like a weird broken. That would be like just like a mod, you know.
I think a big part of that game being so iconic are the camera angles that felt like most of it was being played through security cameras. You know, like those like weird top downy isometric angles that really conveyed like the sort of stalking around in that game.
Yeah, and each room felt like a puzzle because of that. Because it sort of withheld information from you.
I think the thing is, now that Survive is out of the way, did we get NPD on that yet, or is it too soon?
No, it's zero.
Too soon.
Zero.
Yeah, it didn't sell. This first game did not sell any.
Great work, guys. Good.
We did not get MPD yet.
Okay. Because I imagine that is going to dictate a lot of the future of what that franchise holds. That said, whatever they're working on, they're already working on. So I have a feeling Survive is there. It got out of the way. It's out now. That's what you want to do with your money.
We're also like wildly speculating about. Like this being Metal Gear.
Oh, no, totally. Point.
Yeah. Who knows what Konami record, wants to do.
Yeah, so they also...
I have a hunch.
They have... They've worked with EA before.
Yeah.
So one of the other things we were thinking of was...
In a non-Sony capacity, it could be the Mass Effect trilogy.
Yeah.
Which we know after like years of EA saying, we don't want to do remakes. We don't think that's worth the time or the effort or what our players want. They're like, maybe we should do a Mass Effect.
Burnout Paradise just came out this week.
Yeah.
So. And the thing is that, to me, logically, that is such that's such a good... show of faith to the fans. And it's like, we know you love this original trilogy. Here, it's playable in 4K on PS4.
Who? I don't think they...
What?
No. I don't think they love the original trilogy.
They love 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They love 1 and 2. And so imagine, whatever, next year we get the Mass Effect trilogy on PS4 and Xbox One running in 4K. Mass Effect 1 has the 2 and 3 engine. Like, the combat's actually good in these games. And then this wins everyone's love back so that next generation you could just release Mass Effect 4. You just pretend Andromeda didn't happen.
Half-Life 3 is a PlayStation 5 launch title.
I mean, it's
packed in with Portal 3 like, and Left 3
if
Dead.
If EA was smart, this is what they would do. Like, they need, especially BioWare, like, need to get back in people's good graces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're totally right.
I love how this is one of those episodes where, like, Blue Point President said, we're working on our work, and we're like, what if EA did this? Just completely yeah. spun out of control.
Well, no. So there is one thing. The thing I actually do think this is.
Oh, that Andrew suggested to you. Right?
Yeah. Shut up.
I
think this is Demon's Souls. I think we have gotten the rumors of a Demon's Souls remake forever. Huh. The Demon's Souls servers just went off. The Demon's Souls, it just got re-rated.
Really?
Yeah, it just got rated again. And I think this could be, you know, there have been rumors of this for the longest time.
Right.
So I think in theory, remaking Demon's Souls to work on PS4, having it look like Dark Souls 3, in my opinion, would be as big, if not bigger, than
right.
the Colossus.
And we're getting the Dark Souls remake in like a month.
We're getting Dark Souls yeah. 1 remake in the yeah. month, so... Yeah,
Which I randomly have been getting really excited about, having played through Bloodborne again yeah. this year, because that game whooped my ass when I first played it, and it pushed back too hard, and I just gave up.
Yeah,
I know it's a much more slower, clunkier, more methodical game, but
you like understand what it's trying to do.
Yes,
like your brain is there for it.
Now I'm ready for that language, and I'm yeah. ready to get terrified and yeah. my ass torn apart.
It's so cute.
Yeah. I really like that Solaire Amiibo. I know we don't yeah. talk. It doesn't matter that it's a Nintendo thing, but buy a little Solaire Amiibo and have them next to your Yharnam Tataku.
I think I'm gonna play Dark Souls on PS4.
Yeah. You're not going to swatch it?
You get that big TV. You got the big screen.
You're going to have a full babby when it comes in, like right after it comes out, though. You're going to need to like hold the babby and then go through the undead berg.
The good thing is that putting a game that is infuriatingly hard on a system you can throw, maybe not the best idea.
Ooh, that's not good. The idea of playing Dark Souls on a plane is so weird to me. Yeah. That is not an airplane video game.
You don't want to cuss in front of that crying baby?
No, you're supposed to be seated and not moving when you play Dark Souls. Dark Souls should have a pedometer on it, and if you're moving, it stops.
It's supposed to be in the dark?
What?
Yeah.
Starving?
What are you doing on airplanes? I'm usually seated and not moving.
No, it's moving. You're moving at like several hundred miles an hour.
Doesn't feel like it, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jonathan, what do you think Blue Point's doing?
I feel like if we ignore the Sony of it all, the Mass Effect trilogy is like a pretty good guess for a reasonable thing. For PS1 era, like, there's so much that is now being done. Like, we saw Crash happen. There are all these rumors of Spyro happening. Like, in terms of things that people are nostalgic for, I know it's sort of down here, but, like, Ape Escape I do think is reasonable.
I want photorealistic apes.
I
want it to be like
that
monkey that broke out of the zoo in Japan, and it's just you got to go after him with, like, one of those, like, new sticks.
The fur technology is just amazing in this game. Yeah. Ape Escape is a weird one where, like, I remember playing that game and have memories of it, but they're not, like, super fond. Like... The gameplay just seemed very basic to me when I was younger.
They re-released it like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't hold up. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like iconic PS1 and PS2 games that would be held in the same light as Shadow, and I can't think of a lot.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about Metal Gear. Needs to remake Symphony of the Night.
They could do Eco, but it's like sort of like
why? Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you remake Silent Hill.
Remake The Last Guardian.
You just make The Last Guardian.
Yeah. I mean, that game's problem wasn't visuals, right?
No.
Like, I think it's Metal Gear. I think it should be Metal Gear.
Huh.
But I also think Sony should put a ring on it and just lock these dudes down. For
life.
Yeah.
Because like before they go off,
is that how business works?
Yeah. You put a ring. You propose.
Yeah.
Well, Shuhei Yoshida gets down on one knee, and he goes, Will you be my wife forever?
Yeah.
And they go, okay, I will only take your old and cherished memories and make them prettier until I die.
So there is
just the part that's super interesting to me is that they said they're making a remake instead of making their own original game. And they've done such good work making these remakes and remasters. I want to see what they do as an original game.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to know what the studio has in
them. So the funniest thing about all of this is we're talking about this on the PlayStation show. I think there's a good chance it's the Metroid Prime trilogy on Switch.
Yeah.
Really?
They come from retro. And there's rumors that Metroid Prime Trilogy come to Switch. So if that happens, I apologize for this entire segment.
Selfishly, I want that. Not selfishly. Shuhei, time to go ring shopping.
All right. That's enough out of you. Brian, we're going to kick you off right now, and we're going to get Barrett Courtney to come on and talk about Ni No Kuni 2, Revenant Kingdom, because he's been playing it. Barrett's the guy who hangs out in the studio and puts weird JPEGs over our faces when we're trying to have a serious discussion.
Jonathan,
hey, Barrett.
There's Barrett. All right, Brian, get the hell out of here.
All right,
you're allowed to like say your final words.
No, you're not. He did. He said
red wine.
You ever play that game UB40 Hands? You tape a bottle of red wine to each hand and try to drink it.
There's the UB40 joke.
Bye, guys. Have fun with the Ninu Nanas.
And we're back, and we're joined by Barrett, who's been playing Ni No Kuni 2, The Revenant Kingdom.
Brap.
Wow. It's like Brian didn't even leave.
That was a start.
He hasn't talked about UB40, so that's good.
Yeah, you're off to a great start.
Barrett
haven't shouted at all, so that's wonderful. It's just like a very nice change of pace.
Barrett, you and Jonathan have started Ni No Kuni 2 from the beginning of playing a bit.
Yes, we have.
Yes.
You gotta just
the end.
How many hours have you played of this fine game?
So one of my frustrations with this game is that it counts the hours that you spend just in menus.
Oh,
so
God.
Yeah, I'm it says I'm 11 hours in, but I think it's more of 8.
Okay.
Around the hour
mark. I'm like 10 or so in. A very little time on menus, so probably like
yeah. So you guys are still like probably just scratching the surface though, because oh, like absolutely. Big old,
I assume. So. I mean, like I'm currently level 23. My characters are, but
brag about it.
I'm pretty good at the game, but I assume it's still pretty early on.
Okay, so first things first, this is a sequel, which was a PS3 exclusive for the first one, and I know that
well, also
of,
for
that
DS. Missed it. That weird.
That was like a side story.
Because Ni no Kuni started out as a DS game, I believe.
Yeah,
in Japan.
Did it?
In Japan, I believe it was a DS game.
So they're kind of as an IP, it's sort of all over the place. But I know that's always a lot of the concern with a lot of people jumping into a new massive RPG is who are these weird anime animals. So is this a standalone story from the ground up?
It is slightly connected to the first one. I only played about the first third of the PS3 version of the game, and what has been told to me is that there are slight connections.
But this takes place like 100 years after, or like
I don't know
some
100 years. It's definitely like
some
a time
amount of
after.
Time.
You don't like the characters that were in the first one aren't really in this one. There's references.
Yeah, but you're not like immediately disoriented, right?
No, absolutely.
Okay, so it is totally a fine jumping on point.
You live inside of Drippy.
Yes.
Drippy
yes.
has been carved open, and your hut is inside.
He's looking at a snow globe.
The Welsh lantern from the first game.
We could talk about that, but the accents and dialogue in this game are just all over the place for like just different UK dialects.
Can you still play it with Japanese audio dub or subtitle?
I'd assume so. I haven't tried.
I haven't really gone into it, because I think the versions that we got, are already English and
okay.
English.
So one worry that people had is the first game famously had a partnership with Studio Ghibli of Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, Castle in the Sky, Poco Rosso. That partnership doesn't exist anymore. People are worried, like, oh, does that mean this is going to feel like a direct-to-DVD game? What do you guys think?
So there's definitely a feel with the cutscenes that I get the sort of direct-to-DVD feeling with. Because from what I remember playing the first game, there were like a couple like robust cutscenes, like 5 minutes, where you get that Ghibli charm, and like sort of getting these characters out and like making them having that, you know, like Princess Mononoke charm or Spirited Away and stuff. With these cutscenes, the frustration that I have is that they're like, at least as far as I've played for 8 hours, they're like maybe 30 seconds, maybe 11 seconds of just like introducing a new character and like them reacting to something, and then it goes back into like in-engine dialogue text that you have to
with
read
them occasionally saying a word or two, but sometimes those dialogue things will have them say the full dialogue randomly, and they just clearly didn't maybe have time or budget to animate. But is that weird thing where there's like a scene where King Evan, it's like he's going to give a rousing speech, and then it's like a 10-second speech, and you're like, oh, that's the whole thing. Okay. Like I'm good. I get to go back to playing the game, which I really enjoy playing, but it's like, oh, okay, I expected more.
So. Luckily, in game, the game still looks good. Like, the game's still great.
So, I love like a lot of the creature design, the characters and stuff are all
there's great. Still a charm to it that like even what you don't get from the cutscenes, there's still a story being told that I'm enjoying.
Yeah.
That I feel like if it was like if you told me that this was a Ghibli sort of directed story, like I'd be like, okay, yeah, I see that.
Well, it's interesting because even like in the animation department, one of Ghibli's more recent also there's no right way to say it, just for the record, it's Ghibli or Ghibli or whatever.
Ghibli.
But they one of the more recent shows, I think it's on Amazon, they did cell shaded. So they're doing full on CG over at their end. So I think initially it was like, oh, is it like it's like not the real full hand drawn animation. It's all CG at this point. Yeah. So,
but definitely the cutscenes feel more like Aladdin 2, Return of Jafar.
Yeah.
And less Aladdin 1.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
But does it play like Aladdin 1?
Oh, it does. Like the old platform.
Genesis
Aladdin.
Or Super.
Shinji Mikami.
Weirdly both.
I'm too young for all of these references.
The combat in this has been pretty much thrown out the window. The first one was kind of like a Pokemon esque, but with like real time.
Yeah, the first one really reminded me a lot of Chrono Trigger, where it is like the sort of Pokemon, you got all these menus and you're fighting with multiple people, but it's still real time, but you're telling your little monster boys like attack or defend or like use this item and whatnot. And that's all been thrown away for sort of total real time with like a party of like you and two other people of
as
straight up
as well as your Pikmin
Yeah, so they traded Pokemon for Pikmin.
Yeah, well,
Higgledies.
Higgledies are lit.
For me, I love. We'll get to the Higgledies in a second. Higgledies are great. I almost cursed about the Higgledies. That's how excited I am about them. The combat for me is like a mix of Pikmin and Kingdom Hearts, which just plays right to my base. So hi,
you're
everyone.
Blowing right.
Yeah,
now.
This, yeah. I didn't expect it going in, but it's real time and there's a depth to it that you can get into, but it's also surface level. If you want to just kind of button mash and do cool spells and do some awesome melee attacks, like you can do that. But there's also you can strategize and you can use your Higgledies who do special attacks and come in to help you and aid you with health or different giant.
Yeah,
sort of
different
specials.
Different like sort of sections of Higgledies. There's like. You see, if you're watching the video version on youtube.com/IGNBeyond, there's
plug.
These four little squares at the bottom that show these sort of weird little creatures, and each one sort of has a different specialty. The white one that you get at the beginning of the game, I think it's just like a basic attack. One of the green dudes
heals you.
One of them heals you, and then one does like a wind attack, I
think. Yeah, there's also like a stat. One does a stat boost for attack.
Gotcha.
Whereas like the purple ones that you can get are just OP. They drop a bomb of like dark gravity on your enemies and it's completely
desolate them. Are there only four of them, or are they kind of like elemental types?
You get to use four at a time. There's, based on the color, like in Pikmin, it's like, oh, this one is a water type. Okay. This one's sun. Okay. This one's fire.
So there's still a little bit of that like Pokemon-esque of like not capturing, but like finding these creatures and having them help you in combat and like going up to them and being
obviously people are going to nitpick the Pokemon comparison, but the first one had like the animals you were enslaving felt like party members rather than in this case, which it's almost more like an elemental creature that's running around. And
they very much feel like ancillary. Like I've gotten through a ton of matches and just fought the enemies myself and not used them at all, but for strategizing and for using them on more difficult enemies, they are totally vital and worth using, and they're really fun to use too. Yeah, they also all have different sort of personalities. So it'll be like, this one's Whiff Wafty the Waft, who's shy.
That sounds so
good. Whiff Wafty the Waft.
This is why Higgledies are lit.
Well, you heard it here.
Hashtag
Higgledies
lit.
Are lit. you have written down on this sheet, puzzles, we want more. IGN.com.
Yes.
Puzzles, we want
wrote
more.
That? Real quick, I wrote that. But real quick,
I shared that sentiment.
There's another portion of the combat in your overworld where you're the little chibi versions of these characters, which I like the overworld sort of like how is a nod back to like Final Fantasy VII era of like when you go into battle, it's like these like totally detailed characters. But when you're like walking around, it's like totally like low poly like sort
D4.
Of versions. Yeah. And it's like the more modern version of that.
Yeah.
And then you have in the overworld, you'll have, if you're watching the video version, these sort of army versus army combat things, which is very like tactics
with a little bit of Pikmin in it, but it's just another version of Pikmin-esque battles, but not
that
with
makes a lot of sense, because obviously the big thing in this is the kingdom building, which we'll talk about in a second. Yeah. But I remember like the extent of the kind of the Shibi gameplay in the first overworld game was like you're mostly just avoiding enemies on the map. Like there wasn't a whole lot of really doing stuff while you were in that perspective. But this seems like they've actually fleshed that out a bit.
So here they're sporadically throughout the overworld, and you can jump into these battles, and you'll have a couple people who are sort of your army factions, then, and they all have different special abilities, and they all have a certain number of units with them, and they're sort of like a rock, paper, scissors of like the red army hurts the green army, which hurts the blue army, etc. And so you essentially have to dominate that map. Through the course of that battle, using your special abilities.
They got some systems in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so like some of them are definitely story-based. Some of them are optional that you can find in the overworld. If you like this kind of stuff, I've found a couple that I was like, yeah, I'll go back into this. Like, this isn't the type of stuff that I'm into. I'm not very into tactics games like this, but I was having fun. I was learning a lot.
Yeah, I've enjoyed them a lot.
Well, and you mentioned systems. Like, we haven't even gotten to the titular system, which is the building of the Revenant Kingdom.
Yeah. Yeah, this game is interesting because it seems like it's got so many layers to it, and it's really like, where do you start? Like, what's to be like, oh, it's a JRPG is pretty dismissive because there's really a lot going on here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the game unfurls it as you go. Like, it's not, here's 10 systems, learn how to do them. Like, it's like, here's the normal battle, here are the Higgledies, here's a thing called the tactic tweaker in your menu that allows you to sort of turn the tide of battle to like different elements and things like that. Like,
Well, I think the point is, if you're patient to play a game called Ni No Kuni 2 Revenant Kingdom, Kingdom, you're probably patient enough to learn its systems.
Yeah.
Such as the puzzles. We want more.
Puzzles.
Tell us about the puzzles.
We want puzzles because they're also lit.
They're just jigsaw puzzles. It's
yeah.
That's
it?
No.
No. So there's a specific section of this game where you're playing as King Evan and you need to find a Kingmaker, which is essentially you have to conquer this beast or creature to basically let you become a king. And so, like, Evan's journey, he has to sort of find his and make his own kingdom. And then, but before he can do that, he has to sort of take these Kingmaker trials. And the if you're watching the video version, you see the gameplay here of there's a story being told, like a storybook. And through the puzzle, you have to, like, sort of guess, like, which or sort of, like, come to conclusion of, like, which statue you have to, like, walk to first. And, like, they need to be pointed – they need to be looking at, like, a specific object for some of them. And that's the only time I've seen this puzzle, like, 8 hours in. And I want more of these because they were really fun and, like, really, really cool.
Also, you got all the bonus orbs. Good job. It's that thing of we got – to this section, surprisingly, I thought it would just be like a battle challenge. And then it's like, oh, solve this battle based on the short story you have to read. And it's, you can do like a top overview to see the whole map. And I spent like 5 minutes like tracing lines on my TV with my finger being like, okay, if I go this way, it won't work that way. Wait, let me start here and this. And it was like a really fun, unexpected aspect of it. And I'm maybe an hour or two later than you, but I really hope these return or there are other puzzles like this.
I like the idea that this keeps layering systems, but they don't feel half-assed. Like they don't feel like they're just there for the sake of being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like whether it's the combat, whether it's the real-time strategy stuff, whether it's the puzzle stuff, whether it's the actual kingdom building.
Like, yeah. And we haven't even touched on that yet, which is so far I'm early on with it, but I'm really having a good time with it. You okay there, Marty?
Don't die on us.
So essentially you start out, King Evan finds the plot of land that's going to be the start of his kingdom, and you decide, oh, wait, we should actually build this kingdom now that people are interested in living here. And so you start the castle, and then you get a bit of King Guilders, I guess they're called.
I haven't got there yet.
There's some sort of currency that essentially you use to build different types of buildings within your kingdom. So it's like, I need an armory. I need a weapons depot. I need somewhere that's researching spells, and I need a Higgledy shop to help upgrade the Higgledies because they're lit.
Oh.
And I'm sorry I said that. And so you build these different areas in your kingdom and you can upgrade them and you add certain citizens to each building to do research and to build sort of to keep leveling them up. What it reminded me a lot of is the Assassin's Creed 2 villa. Mm-hmm. Where you have your villa and you're sort of, you have a chest that keeps getting replenished with gold, which you then use to put back into the villa. So it's just, it's this thing that builds on itself, but it's sort of, it depends on how much you want to attend to it.
Yeah.
That's how big it grows.
That excites me a lot. I really loved the Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, me too. Building. And this feels, I think, probably a little more tied into the story, whereas the villa you could kind of just leave be if you want to, but this is sort of part of the main thrust of the story is building your kingdom up. And so it's exciting to just be starting there and seeing how it can grow.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I have so far, just again, I'm only 8 hours into what I assume is at least an 80 to 100-hour game, is everything feels a little segmented. And I think that just might be sort of the mood I'm in with a JRPG after playing Persona 5, where everything transitions into each other really well. Like when you're in a hub world in this game, when you go into like the regular combat, you can just see the enemies and you go up and you start fighting them, and like the map will show you like this is the battle area right here. But then when you're in the overworld and you have like all the sort of like little monsters that you have to like walk around and stuff, if you go into that battle, it feels like there's a momentum building, and then you have to wait and get into that battle and then do the battle and it's cool, and then you have to wait and then get back into the overworld, and none of it really transitions well.
Yeah, it's almost like less a knock on Ni No Kuni and more of like, well, if you're being compared to Persona, it's just
I think that's the mark of a really good game is when the one you play after it sort of frustrates you just for not being the last.
Yeah.
But it's the thing where I feel we're very much in still if I agree with you. It could be 80 hours long. We're still in the tutorial section, much in the way in Persona, you're still in the tutorial 25 hours in, it feels like sometimes. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if things start to coalesce, but I totally agree. Right now, it feels like I do the tactics battle, and then I go over here to do the in-world battle. And then
hopefully, after you get through all of the learning about the game, hopefully they sort of meld together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like this is also coming out at such a good time because like it's a busy week or two with A Way Out and Far Cry 5 and not on PlayStation, but Sea of Thieves.
Yeah,
but it doesn't feel like it doesn't have competition in any of those. Like it doesn't feel the same as any of those, and there's no JRPG sort of on the timeline. Like, we're getting Detroit and God of War and
God of War,
Souls.
My favorite JRPG.
Yeah, yeah. So, like,
well, hey,
I feel
maybe
like it
as
has
long
a,
as some of them.
I feel like it has a runway for a while of sort of being singular and by itself in terms of games like this coming up.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah.
There's no mainstream Persona game coming out this year, so this is probably.
Well, are they going to be dancing?
That doesn't count. It's a dancing game. It's
dancing is so mainstream.
It is more mainstream than RPGs.
Yes.
Yeah.
I hate to be comparing these two, but I do oddly think that this might be this year's Persona 5, where Persona 5 came out early in the year last year, and I don't feel like a lot of people like there was a different hype about it around like than the other Persona games. Like, yeah. More people knew about it this time around. There were people paying attention, and then it came out. And it came out in like that 2 week period of Zelda and Horizon. Mm. And so it sort of dipped off for a while. And slowly throughout the year, you had this sort of hype building again of, yeah, like, oh.
People got to it in the summer. They got,
yeah,
to it in the fall.
We got to, yeah, like people got to it later and they're like, oh, this game's actually awesome. And then it got into Game of the Year conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think that could possibly happen with Ni No Kuni.
Yeah. It's very much a game that I was going to not like skip entirely, but be like, okay, I probably don't need to play at launch because there are four other games out that week and I need to make sure I try everything. And here's an 80-hour game I don't want to dive into, but I played 2 hours. I'm like, I need to keep playing this. Yeah. I was really getting into the flow of it.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't play it all this weekend, and it was the only game I wanted to play over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. That's rad. It's interesting because I feel like growing up with kind of older JRPGs, I always thought of them. I mean, there's the combat, the strategy, the story. There's a lot of time in menus, but you think back and like, you know, old Final Fantasies did occasionally have puzzles, and they did have like, mm-hmm, you know, there were other mechanics thrown in there. But it's weird how almost cookie cutter a lot of JRPGs almost either they feel very safe or they kind of find their own sort of like their kind of boilerplate, like that this is how you play the game. But it's cool to see between something like this and something like Persona 5, where there's so many other systems at once, mm-hmm, that it's almost like, you know, it's almost like a Mario Party, but with a story tying everything, yeah, together. You know, you're, yep, doing all these different things and kind of juggling. Totally.
Yeah. Like, beyond that first tactics battle, I don't really know if you have to do any of those mandatorily. Like, they're in the overworld, but you can kind of just walk around them. Mm-hmm. So if that's not your thing, you can probably skip it. And I assume with the kingdom building, you could probably just do the base level of it. Yeah. And just get by and follow the story. So, yeah, if you just want to see what the story is like, it feels like you can probably do that, yeah, too.
Also, Roland, Best Boy 2018. You heard it here first, IGN.com.
Sure.
Puzzles. We want more.
Roland, the best boy. I'm excited.
Lofty, cool, is best Lisa Simpson.
Yeah. We don't talk about bootleg Lisa Simpson.
So, yeah, this comes out, what, the 23rd?
Yes.
Yeah. And do we know who's reviewing it?
No idea.
Should probably get on that.
Yeah.
Marty Sleva.
I'm sure Dan
Marty is reviewing it. Marty Sleva.
I know who's reviewing it. It's not someone at this table, probably.
The healthiest, yeah, least tired man at IGN. Yeah, so we'll have stuff on that here. And yeah. On that note, we're gonna end the show. I don't know how that works. I
guess good
job. Dan's in the studio. But anyway, Barrett, where are you on Twitter?
I'm at SadBoyBarrett, and in case you don't know me, because I'm usually not on this side of the camera, I do video gameplay capture for IGN, so I do the first minutes, and the most popular series for IGN, graphics comparisons. And,
I was going to say Injustice 2 gameplay videos.
And,
I love how graphics comparisons are kind of the who wore it better of games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and I also am a regular producer for this show, Podcast
Beyond. Well, you've been doing a great job in spite of the people who complain about the JPEGs you put on the
Joseph Peggs.
I put Sora's face over Jonathan a couple times earlier in this episode.
Well,
he
does that at home sometimes too.
Yeah. But it's just my mirror is just cut out of Sora's face. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Cool. Just looks great.
You can find Jonathan on Twitter. He's JM Dornbush. Yep. Marty is McBiggity with 2 G's and 2 T's.
Yeah. And we're also next. Oh, you, know, you do yours, and then I'm going to make an announcement.
Yeah, you just make the announcement.
Way to pregnant ruin the momentum here,
you're
Marty.
You're pregnant?
No, Beyond. we're going to have a special episode early next week of Beyond, because Andrew and I are going to play God of War for a couple hours this week, and so we're going to record a real quick, just little intimate love session where we talk about God of War.
Ooh.
I don't know if I can say when the embargo is, but it's early next week.
You can't say.
It's like we're
so we don't have to do Beyond next week?
No, we're still doing it because it's GDC. We're doing fancy Beyonds.
Double Beyond.
All in suits.
All right. We can get fancy.
Ooh, I like that.
Anyway, this is a weird show. I'm still jet lagged. Yeah, anyway, that's the end of the show. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube. If you're not already, it's youtube.com/IGNBeyond. You can tell by how much Barrett's moving around when we're saying talking about that. He wants you to do that. Go do that.
Do it.
Helps the people who make the things that you watch on the thing.
Also, one that I also recently learned is ring the bell to get the notifications of every time an episode of Beyond goes up.
Yeah. Ring the bell and you get the cookie. It comes down the chute and you learn a valuable lesson. That's the end of the show. It's over. Goodbye.
Beyond.
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 Beyond. Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.